It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we heard yesterday from the Secretary-Designee of the State Department of Corrections about what he thinks Governor Evers' budget does for criminal justice reform. Today, we'll hear from a criminal justice reform advocate about concerns he has about that budget. First, transportation funding remains one of the most difficult issues for state lawmakers to reach a consensus on. 2 years ago, disagreements within the Republican Party over how to address a shortfall of transportation funds delayed approval of the overall state budget by more than 2 months. New Governor Tony Evers is proposing an increase in the state's gas tax along with other measures to raise revenue, but the GOP-controlled legislature is pushing back on some of those ideas. Tomorrow, the Tommy Thompson Center on Public Leadership is hosting a summit at the Harley-Davidson Museum in Milwaukee about transportation issues. State officials, lawmakers, and plenty of others are planning to talk about the future of transportation here in the state. Craig Thompson is the Secretary-Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. He's with us now in our studio. Secretary-Designee Thompson, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, funding is the big issue, or one of the big issues with transportation in Wisconsin. It's a puzzle that remains unsolved over the last bunch of years. Can you paint us a picture of what the transportation funding picture looks like?
Well, you know, if we go back to 2006, from 1980 until 2006, we used to index the gasoline tax here in Wisconsin so that it would sort of keep up with inflation and act more like what the income and sales tax do that fund the rest of government. But in 2006, we got rid of that, and the idea was that it was taxation without representation and that we should have to vote if we're going to adjust it. But that's never happened since that. So for 13 years, there's never been a vote. So it's never been adjusted and moved up. So that's a flat amount. The registration fees are a flat amount. And at the same time, we're driving more fuel-efficient cars. And at the same time as that, we have an interstate system that's turned 50 years old and needs to be rebuilt. So that's all culminated in causing a real problem.
Inflation, the cost of hiring people, the cost of building stuff goes up with inflation. So we're seeing that go up while the funding stays steady. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's exactly what you're hearing. And in the meantime, what we did do for the projects we got done is we just borrowed more and more. And there's nothing wrong with bonding if you're doing it in a responsible way, along with, you know, increasing your revenues. But we mistook it as a financing mechanism for a funding mechanism. So now 20 cents of every dollar we do get in goes to pay for debt service for projects that were already done. So then we have even less left to put into our roads.
Do our roads show the impact of that right now?
They absolutely do. You know, when we talk about our local roads, which are city, town, county roads, which make up 89% of the miles in Wisconsin, it's a little more subjective, but I haven't heard a lot of debate that people are not happy with the condition of their local roads. With our state highways, we have objective data, which says, according to the International Roughness Index, that we have the roughest roads in the Midwest and some of the roughest in the country.
In the last budget debate, we heard some Republicans, especially in the state Senate, and some environmental groups saying, well, wait, hold on. Part of the problem is we're spending too much and we're spending on new road building projects that are optional at best. Is there a case to be made for that?
Well, we've taken a strong look, and if you look at what's in the governor's budget, with the revenue we've proposed, an 8-cent gas tax increase, among with a couple other things, and with that money, we're proposing to fix what we have first. The vast majority of that goes into fixing our current two-lane state highways throughout the state. The major improvement program, which is what funds those bigger projects, we actually reduced the budget for that. We didn't increase it at all. The one project that does have to do with capacity that's in there is we do propose finishing the zoo interchange, but I think it'd be irresponsible not to finish that project that we've started.
Are there projects that, at least maybe at the local level, people are saying, hey, we need this, fund this, that you're not doing?
Oh, I think if you had on a county board chair or a town board chair, they would give you, every one of them would give you a list that we're not able to get to. But with what we're proposing and the additional $320 million in state highway rehabilitation, we're going to be able to move up over 200 projects where we're going to get out to be able to fix some of those state highways throughout the entire state.
Talking to Craig Thompson, the appointed secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, looking at transportation issues in the state. Keep using words like appointed secretary or secretary designee. You and your colleagues on the cabinet, not yet approved by the state Senate. Is that something that worries you as you try to plan for the future of your gig with the state right now?
No, not really. It doesn't really impact. I know my predecessor, it took them 9 months before he got approved. And you really go about doing your job. I don't think there's ever been a secretary in the state of in Wisconsin that they haven't given the governor the ability to do that. So I know there's talk about it, but it's not something that really concerns me.
Now, we're going to get back to the financing of roads in a bit. Cars and roads, they're the things people mostly talk about when it comes to transportation funding. What other kind of priorities are there, though, in the state budget we should be looking at in terms of public transportation and alternatives to cars?
Yeah, there's very important other parts of our transportation budget. We're proposing a 10% increase in the aids for mass transit across the state, and that's long overdue. Our cities, and generally it's our cities, but Milwaukee County operates the bus system down in Milwaukee. You know, they've been struggling to keep up, and the state has not helped them with that. So a 10% increase for that. We also propose to create a new program to help them replace their capital buses. We put $10 million into that program as well. We also have bonding dollars in there for freight rail preservation and a significant increase for the harbor preservation program as well.
Let's talk about that freight rail preservation. A lot of freight moves through Wisconsin. There's some newcomers relatively, sand, for example. What kind of priorities do you see? What kind of concerns do you have about our rail infrastructure?
Well, when it comes to state funding for rail, the vast majority of our rail in the state is by the Class 1 railroads, meaning like Canadian National and Canadian Pacific. And those are privately owned, and they upkeep those all themselves. But we do have some state-owned lines, generally ones that have been abandoned that we feel are important to keep up, that the Class 1s didn't want anymore for important industries in that. So we have what we call a freight rail preservation program, and we're putting some more bond dollars in there so we can get those upgrades done, because there's some very important portions of our network that will help with.
You mentioned public transportation, and a lot of people think of that as larger cities. I've definitely talked to people on the show who have concerns about getting around in rural Wisconsin, whether you're barely employed, you can't afford to keep that car up, you're a senior who wants to age in place. A lot of communities are trying to cobble something together. Are there things the state can do to help them out?
There certainly is. And like you said, we generally think of the big bus systems and that, but transit also does fund, you know, up in Bayfield and Ashland. They've got a very robust transit system up there. And when you talk about people aging in place and people with disabilities, we proposed the biggest increase ever in the elderly and disabled program, $6 million increase, that will hopefully help allow people to stay in their homes and not have to move into institutions.
All right, let's get back to how we pay for roads. There have been a lot of surveys over the years saying, should we be able to pay for our road maintenance? People say yes. And then you ask how to do it, and majorities tend to reject each particular option. You mentioned that 8 cents per gallon, I think it was, gas tax increase. Is this something you think you can sell to people?
I really do. I know a lot of people have talked about the Marquette law pool, asked a pretty generic question. Would you support increasing gas taxes or registration fees to pay for transportation? And I would kind of equate that to a generic ballot when you're voting for somebody, when you're not saying how much you'd raise it by and what you'd do with it. I know that the Tourism Federation had asked specifically, would you support an 8 cent increase in the gas tax and getting rid of minimum markup, which is what Governor Evers has proposed. And that had a 54% yes. So I think when we get into the specifics and people see where we're going to spend the dollars, and the fact that 8 cent, even if it all went in the pump, which I don't think it would all increase, would add up because of getting rid of minimum markup. But even if it did, it would cost the average person, average driver, about $36 a year.
How much does that end up raising for the state, roughly? Or how much does that 8 cent a gallon increase help us meet our transportation needs?
So it would raise about $485 million over the biennium. We are proposing to return indexing, too, so that it would be able to continue to keep up with inflation.
So then, every couple of years, then, the price would go up along with inflation.
Along with inflation, right. And then the two other areas that we propose raising new revenue is when you get a title for your car, we're proposing to increase that cost by $10, and then an increase of 27% for heavy truck registration fees. And by heavy truck, I mean the semis and the commercial carriers.
People have talked about tolling in Wisconsin, throwing that out there as an option. I know it's a little trickier. I think we need Congress to sign off to allow us as a state to toll interstate highways. Do you see that as a piece of the puzzle for the future?
You know, for the future, I think tolling could be a tool. I think sometimes people mistake. I don't think it could be the answer. And it certainly couldn't be the answer for right now. As you just said, we couldn't do it immediately other than, you know, on a brand new lane only or on some bridges and things. But I think it's worth being part of the conversation for longer term.
We're talking to Craig Thompson, Secretary Designee of the state's Department of Transportation, looking at some of the big transportation challenges facing the state, including how to pay for roads. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What transportation issues are important for you in your area, in your line of work? Are you worried about the quality of your local roads, your highways as you drive around the state? Do you want to see more support for some kind of public transport in your area, whether that's a fixed route bus system or something that meets the needs of a small town or rural area? And how do you think we should pay for improvements and maintenance of our roads? Higher gas taxes, user fees, borrowing? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with Craig Thompson, Governor Evers' appointee as the Department of Transportation Secretary, looking at transportation issues in the state and how we pay for it all. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do your roads, your local roads, have you worried? Do you see problems? Do you think more maintenance needs to be done? Do you want to see better public transportation in your part of the state? How should Wisconsin pay for it? Raising the gas tax a little bit as proposed in the state budget, some kind of user fees. What do you want to see happen? What don't you want to see happen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before we go to our callers, Craig, what are you hearing from state lawmakers? Now you have to get a sign off from Republican lawmakers on all of this. What are you looking at as we enter this budget negotiation period?
You know, I think they're going back and looking at the overall budget, including the transportation budget, and trying to come up with, you know, the ideas that they want to put forward. So, I haven't heard a lot of direct feedback about what they're looking to do right now as it pertains to transportation or what changes they may want to make.
Let's bring on a caller now. We've got Mike on the line in Portage. Mike, hi.
Hi. I'm an older operator, and I hear that you want to raise our registration on semis 10 to 20%. You realize what we're already paying?
What are you paying now, Mike, off the top of your head?
A year ago, I paid $2,700 to register my truck, and this year was $1,789 or something like that.
Thanks a lot for the call, Mike. So 10 or 20% might not sound like a lot, but when you're starting at a four-digit number, that's a significant number.
No, I understand that. And actually, I probably shouldn't say this, but what I said was 27%. And, you know, but we did talk with the motor carriers and others, and while they did not, I want to be clear, I'm not saying they asked us to raise this registration fee, but they did say they supported the gas tax as a way to improve the roads, and they really asked us not to do tolling. That was their big issue. You know, we do know that the heavy trucks cause the most wear and tear, and we're trying to be as equitable as we can across, but I understand what he's saying.
Do you know, Craig, how we compare with other states when it comes to these license fees?
For heavy trucks?
For heavy trucks,
I think
yeah.
We're about 15th or so in the country.
Okay, so yeah. on the high yeah. half yeah. of the state. Of the
I mean,
country.
There's other ways to do it, again, and we can open it up. In Ohio, they just passed, in the last couple of weeks, a 10-cent increase in their gas tax and a 19-cent increase in their diesel. That was sort of their way of getting at that differential with the heavier trucks. So I get what he's saying, but in the end, I think we're all going to have to put in a little bit towards this.
Thanks for that call. We're going out to Jeremy in Racine. Jeremy, hi.
Hi. Kind of going on after that last caller in regards to the increases on the trucking industry. Anytime you guys do those cost increases, they're just going to pass those on to their customers, which is going to be passed on to their consumers, which is us who go into grocery stores and purchases these products. So it doesn't just end with the trucking company, especially for the fuel and the fuel surcharges that they will charge to their customers on the increases in fuel costs. All those extra costs increases the cost of goods at the stores in which we patron.
Jeremy, I got you, Jeremy. Thanks for the call. Craig, we all end up paying, he says, for that increase in license fees.
Well, again, I'm not going to say that some of the costs would not be passed on, but when we have roads that are in the condition they're in and you get congestion areas, that loss to those companies that are doing the shipping, that's being passed on to the customer too. So, you know, at the end of the day, we're not going to be able to fix these roads with magic beans. We're going to have to figure out a way to actually raise the money.
Thanks a lot for that call. John joins us now in Neenah. John, hello.
Hello there. I've had an idea for quite a while, and I keep talking to legislators, and they keep poo-pooing my idea. And that is any trailer that's pulled behind a motor vehicle, whether it be a little garden tract, a trailer, or a single-axle, double-axle trailer, any kind of a trailer that's pulled behind a motor vehicle needs to have a license plate on it. and you can base the cost on the plate by either the gross weight of the trailer or the number of axles the trailer has. But I'm thinking any trailer that's pulled by a motor vehicle needs to have a license plate.
John, thanks for the call. A lot of them do, don't they, Craig?
Yeah, I believe so. And I think some have talked about increasing that or trying to do that. It wouldn't be a significant revenue increase to the fund, but I understand what the gentleman's saying, and it's something we can continue to look at.
Talking about Wisconsin's transportation needs with Craig Thompson, Secretary of the State's Department of Transportation. You can join in with your thoughts, opinions, and questions at 800-642-1234. Hans joins us now in Lincoln County. Hans, hello.
Hi there.
What do you want to bring up, Hans?
My call. Well, I'm a county board supervisor, and we are definitely feeling it at the local level as far as our ability to fix roads. The roads are in tough shape, and I think it's worth mentioning that the gas tax, I think, is a good idea. It's fair. Whoever uses the roads are going to help pay for them. It's not just Lincoln County residents not just Wisconsin residents who end up paying that. It's people who come in from outside the state. So that's, another good revenue source from that standpoint. But I think it's also worth mentioning that, had we done something, at the state level years and years ago, some of our repairs wouldn't be quite so expensive either. I mean, we've basically let our infrastructure crumble for the last 10 years. And so now it costs more to keep that up. So raising that gas tax is, I think, a very good response, a good way where everybody has to chip in. It also discourages people from using vehicles that are less fuel efficient, which is obviously important for the climate.
Hans, thanks a lot for that call. Are we, Craig, seeing the cost of deferred maintenance, as Hans was saying there?
Yeah, Hans raised a number of good points, and there's no question. The longer you wait, it becomes more and more expensive. If you don't keep up on the routine maintenance, you end up doing repairs that are much more expensive. And, the point he makes about the gas tax as well, there's 30 states just within the last 5 years that have increased their fuel taxes. You can administer it. You can collect it right now. There's less than a 1% administration fee, and we can get it from people that travel in from out of state as well.
Hans, thanks a lot for calling in. And are you hearing from a lot of local officials? Hans identified himself as a county supervisor there.
Yes, we are. And they're really feeling the pinch. I mean, the towns and not just the towns, but the farmers that use the town roads are really saying that, we're in dire straits right here. They're able to fix. A lot of these locals are on a 200-year replacement schedule for roads that are engineered to last 30, 40 years. So something's going to have to give.
Thanks for the call, Hans. Steve is with us now in Stoughton. Steve, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. So I am an electric car owner, and there's a few things related to electric cars that fit into this conversation. Number one, gas tax is not sustainable in a long-term fashion because more and more electric cars are coming on the road. Perhaps a mileage per year declaration and fee when you register your car each year, re-register your car would be more. But I really want to say that, every kilowatt hour of energy used by an electric car, there's a tax that is paid for that kilowatt hour that goes to the general fund. And as more electric cars come on the road, there's more money going to the electric or to the general fund for electric use.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Is this a concern for the future of the gas tax if a lot of cars are using way less or zero gas, Craig?
Again, I think it is something that we're going to want to look at for the longer term. But currently, hybrids and electrics together make up less than 3% of our fleet. So for right now, and we have a right now problem, the gas tax is a very efficient way to raise the money. He makes a great point that as we plan for a decade plus out, I think, vehicle miles traveled and other things might be something we have to look at.
Thanks, Steve, for the call. We'll go to Mike now in Milwaukee. Mike, hello.
Yeah, I believe a wheel tax based on those three priorities of weight of the vehicle, mileage of the vehicle, and value of the vehicle distributes the weight equally amongst people who are driving motorcycles and don't put on a lot of damage and people who drive heavier vehicles. So those three factors, weight, distance, and value of the vehicle, I think would be a good way to fund the roads.
Mike, thanks for the call. That sounds like it might be harder to implement, though, Craig.
A little bit, but if you do look at, so our registration fee here in Wisconsin State is $75. Our neighbors in Iowa and Michigan and Minnesota all do value-based registration fees, and some have a weight component. So there is that, which is why their registration fees are significantly higher. If we were to pass this 8-cent gas tax increase, the average driver here between our gas tax and our registration fee would still be paying less than any of our neighbors.
Thanks a lot for that call. Time for another call, I think. Elma in Montello. Hi.
Hi. I live in Amish country, and a lot of the damage to our roads is done by the steel wheels and the horses' hooves. Is there any possibility that Wisconsin could license the or charge a registration fee for the Amish vehicles? I know, I'm pretty sure that Indiana does.
Alma, thanks a lot for the call. Craig, I don't know anything about that one.
It's been a topic that has come up, and there's certain areas of our state where that's, you know, more of an acute problem than others. I believe we could. I don't know that there's been the political will to want to do that thus far.
Thanks a lot for that call. Are there other priorities, Craig, that we haven't gotten into in our last couple of minutes when it comes to transportation? I know this conference coming up, you're going to be there. It's going to cover a lot of ground.
It is. And I think the biggest thing to me is that we need a sustainable plan. And the conference I'm going to be at is the Tommy G. Thompson Center. And to be as nonpartisan as we can, I really believe it's since Governor Thompson was here that we had a long-range vision. They did Corridors 2020, and we had the funding that went along with it. We can't be doing this in two-year increments. It's just a very inefficient way to look at funding transportation.
Right. And so we're in the midst of a budget, and that's on a two-year cycle. Can we frame the discussion around that budget in a way that is looking at that 10 or 20 year cycle and not just trying to have this stopgap now?
I think we have to, and that's part of on us as the Department of Transportation and others. But I think we have to have a sustainable revenue source. It can't be taking one-time monies from the general fund and trying to dump that in there. It's got to be something ongoing where the planning then that we provide is actually meaningful, and we can make that go with the funding that's available.
We'll leave it there for now. Craig, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Craig Thompson, Secretary-Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. He'll be a presenter tomorrow at that summit we were just talking about on the future of transportation in Wisconsin. It takes place at the Harley-Davidson Museum in Milwaukee. We've been talking about the state budget when it comes to road funding and maintenance. On our show yesterday, we took a closer look at Governor Evers' budget and what it does for criminal justice reform. We heard from Evers' Secretary-Designee of the Department of Corrections, who says the budget takes some steps, but it's just the first step. Today, we hear from someone who thinks the Evers' budget doesn't do enough to make big changes in the state's justice system. David Liners is the State Director of Wisdom, a grassroots faith-based organization advocating for criminal justice reform. David, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we heard, as we said, from Kevin Carr yesterday with the Department of Corrections. He made the case that, okay, there are some things in the budget, but wait and see. We're going to do some more stuff in the near future. As you look at the budget, what has you worried when it comes to criminal justice reform?
So there's a few things. I mean, well, I will say there are a couple of good things having to do with mental health, having to do with job training, et cetera. What really has us concerned very especially is the fact that the governor's budget, particularly the capital budget, calls for actually increasing the size of the Wisconsin prison system, adding beds, adding barracks, which leads one to believe that there's not a very aggressive plan to reduce the prison population. I think as a first step to reduce the prison population by half, it doesn't seem like you would expand the capacity. So that's probably the biggest concern. And the fact that the governor is being very slow in doing some common sense things that could actually be reducing the prison population right now.
For example, what kind of things would you like to see that might help to do that?
Well, one thing, kind of in a sense the lowest hanging fruit, is we have 3,000 people who are eligible for parole in the system. These are people who were convicted in the last century by judges who expected them to get out on parole after a certain amount of time. And that system is basically shut down, or it's gotten incredibly, incredibly slow. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of people who are eligible for release. They've done everything they were supposed to do. And it's just that system. And the governor still hasn't appointed a new chair for the parole commission. That's something he could do and could actually make a point of moving very quickly. A second thing that could be done is to immediately start cutting back the number of crimeless revocations, people being sent back to prison for technical violations of terms of supervision, even though they haven't been convicted of a new crime. That's 3,000 new admissions a year. That's almost 5,000 people in our prisons who aren't there because of having committed a crime. They're there because of a technical violation of a rule. Those are two things that could very immediately, very quickly reduce the prison population.
Now, those are things that might not be included but could be in separate proposals. The parole board appointment, of course, the governor could do. Some of the other things might require legislative approval. Are you hopeful that some of those changes will be along in the months to come?
Well, certainly the parole thing is entirely in the hands of the governor. That's 100% his call. As far as revocations, most all of those crimeless revocations are discretionary, and actually the Department of Corrections has jurisdiction over that discretion of deciding what they're going to do. Very few of those people by legislation need to go back. One thing that we're hopeful for legislatively is that the Treatment Alternatives and Diversions Program, which the governor did propose $1 million a year increase, even though when he was running he promised a $15 million a year increase, but the million is a step in the right direction. But we're thinking that the legislature might actually see their way to increasing that by a lot more than $1 million a year. It's a surefire way to reduce the prison population, reduce recidivism, and actually save money. The Treatment Alternatives and Diversions saves us $2 for every dollar it spends.
Talking to David Liner, State Director of Wisdom, a grassroots faith-based organization advocating for criminal justice reform, talking about prospects for that kind of reform in the new Evers administration. Let's talk about the juvenile justice system. That's been a big story in Wisconsin at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake schools. They are scheduled to be closed at some point. The timeline seems a little uncertain as they look for more local institutions to replace those. What are you watching for on that story?
So I'll start by saying that's something that our organization hasn't – we don't have a lot of expertise on, so I'm speaking with a little less certainty than about other things. I think one of the things we'd really like to see on that, though, is to see things explained better, to see things communicated better to the community. I think that there's a lot of confusion as to what these more local facilities are supposed to look like, what they're supposed to be for. I know people certainly don't want to just replicate Lincoln Hills by having smaller Lincoln Hills scattered around the state. I think there needs to be much more public conversation about what we need, what kind of facilities we really need that are actually going to help kids. Because, boy, kids that young, they really we really need to do everything we can to help them get better. They have a lot of years ahead of them.
Turning back to adult correctional facilities, in our prisons now, there's been concern nationwide over the use of solitary confinement. Where do you see Wisconsin right now when it comes to solitary?
So we made a little progress a few years ago. Secretary Wall actually took some steps that cut back the amount of use of solitary confinement. But we still have, I would say it's nearly 1,000 people in solitary confinement, and there's no good reason for it. There's absolutely no reason we have to keep people locked alone in a room in solitary confinement. And in some cases, we have people in Wisconsin who've been in solitary confinement for decades, like for more than 20 years in a row. That's something that just needs to stop. It's senseless. Our former Secretary of Corrections, Rick Ramish, when he went to Colorado, saw the light. He ended the use of solitary confinement and actually saw the violence level in prisons drop dramatically. It doesn't make anybody safer. It just makes people sick.
We've got the governor's budget proposal on the table. State Republicans in the legislature have proposed some of their own reform legislation. Are there parts of that you're looking at that you think could be steps in the right direction?
So I'm not entirely I'm not well versed in some in what sure. all the Republicans have done. I do know that there is kind of some very much some consensus about the treatment alternatives and diversions. I know that there's some consensus about needing to do some things about revocations. I actually do think this is an area where there can be a lot of bipartisan work together, but we need some leadership.
Now, you've pointed to reforms in the past in Texas as successful, maybe things we could learn from looking at here in Wisconsin. What kind of things are they taking up?
So one of the biggest things that they've done in Texas is actually to cut down dramatically on the number of crimeless revocations. That's been their number one reform. And they're actually closing facilities. So they're not talking about adding to their capacity. They're actually closing facilities, partly because they're finding other ways to hold people accountable who are on supervision without constantly bouncing people back into jail or prison. They've also expanded their earned early release, kind of put more resources into getting people treatment who are in prison so that they can earn their way out a little bit earlier, and that's also helped them to actually close facilities. And Texas's crime rate is dropping faster than the national average.
Let's talk about that revocation issue a little more. You've mentioned it. What does that look like? What kind of things are people finding themselves back in prison for?
So when a person is on extended supervision after they get out, after they've served their prison sentence and they're on extended supervision, they're given a list of rules. It's at least 18. In some cases, it's more than 50. And those include things like, believe it or not, one of the rules is you can't miss a scheduled or unscheduled meeting with your parole officer. I'm not quite sure how you're supposed to be at the unscheduled one. People get bounced back into prison for failing a drug test, for missing an appointment or being late for appointments. Sometimes people need to be in their house by a certain hour and they get a phone call. And if they're not there exactly at that time, you can wind up being revoked for any police contact, which can include being in the car when somebody you're riding with gets a ticket if you forget to report that to your parole officer. There's a lot of reasons. Traveling outside the county without permission. There's a lot of rules. Going into a bar. So there's a lot of rules for people, and it depends very much, it seems, on the luck of the draw. That if it's almost impossible for someone to keep every one of those rules to the letter for years. And if parole officers and their supervisors choose to do so, they can send people back to jail and prison or hold them in a really inhumane place like the Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility for 10 or 21 days.
Well, the concern, I guess, would be that if they can't follow some of the little laws as they are on extended supervision, can we be concerned that they might break the law in more significant ways? So we need this more stringent guidance. What do you want to see instead of that?
So among other things, there's no evidence that failure to keep technical rules of supervision has any correlation to somebody's propensity to commit a crime. I think you and I probably break all kinds of little rules every day. And we don't face going back to prison for them. So there's other ways to hold people accountable. There's fines, there's community service, there's extending the amount of time that you're on supervision. There's rewards like reducing the amount of time that you're on supervision. You can make people report more often or less often. So there's a lot of smaller rewards and a lot of smaller sanctions that we can use instead of just always holding over people's head that you're going to get locked back up if you make the slightest misstep.
As we wrap up, David, do you think that the way we think about crime and punishment in America has changed a lot to where we would make some significant changes that we wouldn't have made even, say, 10 years ago?
I think so. I think people are realizing we need to be concerned really about public safety. We need to be concerned about rehabilitation. We need to be concerned about helping people become productive members of society, not just hitting them over the head time after time after time.
David, thanks for joining us today.
All right. Thank you very much, Rob.
That's David Liners, State Director of Wisdom, a grassroots faith-based organization that calls for criminal justice reform. He was with us to talk about his concerns about the criminal justice measures in Governor Evers' budget and what he wants to see more of. Yesterday on the show, we heard from Department of Corrections Secretary Designee Kevin Carr. You can find that interview online at WPR.org. Federal investigators will conduct an official review of the Wisconsin National Guard's sexual harassment and assault policies after a whistleblower claimed the group didn't properly handle allegations of sexual misconduct from Guard members. Governor Tony Evers and Senator Tammy Baldwin announced the official investigation yesterday after both called on the National Guard Bureau's Office of Complex Investigations to take a look at these cases. Laurel White is the state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Laurel, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, Laurel, start at the beginning of what we know about this. What were the complaints, or what do we know about the complaints that led to all of this?
So this all started last year, actually, when a whistleblower contacted Senator Baldwin's office. We know that, you know, this really started getting headlines in January, and at that point, Baldwin said she had already requested that the Air Force look into these whistleblower allegations because they were happening at the Air National Guard's 115th Fighter Wing, which is based in Madison. And basically what this whistleblower told Baldwin was that there had been six incidents of sexual harassment and assault at that facility between 2002 and 2016 that he was aware of, that he didn't believe had been handled appropriately.
And do we know more about the nature of those or what the whistleblower's concerns were with how the hierarchy at the National Guard dealt with them?
Mm-hmm. Essentially, what these whistleblowers are saying is just that the structure isn't in place for these complaints to be handled appropriately in terms of, you know, getting responses that are adequate to make sure that the victim feels protected, that things are sort of appropriately penalized and you know, transparent or as confidential as these victims want them to be.
Tell us about now this national investigation and this National Guard Bureau that's coming to investigate Wisconsin's practices.
So this is a more wide-ranging investigation. That first whistleblower account that got to Baldwin in 2018 had to do with the Air Force and that Air National Guard office. Now, the Wisconsin National Guard actually has Air and Army branches. So what this investigation is going to look at, which it will be done by the Federal National Guard, so federal officials are going to come to Wisconsin and look at this, will encapsulate both the Air and the Army units. So it's going to be a bit broader than that Air Force investigation of the Air unit, and it's going to look at how they handle, allegations, what the follow-up is like. They're going to look into these specific allegations that they have information about already. And in terms of, you know, the number there, we do know that the Associated Press has done a lot of reporting on this. They asked the National Guard how many reports of sexual assault they've gotten in recent years. And according to the National Guard, they have received 52 reports of sexual assault between 2013 and 2017. So obviously not completely up to date there, but that kind of gives you a little snapshot of time.
And that's in Wisconsin in particular?
Yep, that's the Wisconsin National Guard, so the Air and the Army branches.
So this investigation isn't just that one unit, and these reports are clearly then not just from that one Air unit. Is that right?
Well, the six that were reported to Baldwin early were just the Air unit, but the 52 reports are from both.
Talking to Laurel White, State Capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, looking at a new national investigation of Wisconsin National Guard's sexual harassment and assault policies. And Laurel, what has the Wisconsin National Guard leadership had to say since this all came out?
Well, you know, initially, the leadership of the National Guard was pretty defensive of their practices. They said that they felt like the structures were in place to be as transparent or as confidential as a victim wanted. They thought that disciplinary practices were really up to snuff. They thought that they were handling this in the way that it should be handled. That feedback came specifically after Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald reached out to the leadership there earlier this year because he actually met with another whistleblower who said that she had a negative experience. She didn't feel like her incident was properly handled. So kind of the first response from the National Guard here was that, you know, they thought their practices were pretty good. Now, they've changed their tune a little bit. We got an official statement from them yesterday, and they said they really welcome this evaluation. They're always looking to, you know, make sure that the environment is good for service members. So they're planning to fully cooperate and see what comes of this.
And Governor Evers and Senator Baldwin had announced this investigation yesterday. What kind of things did they have to say?
Well, they said that it's really important for that environment to exist where Guard members feel like, they're supported, that they're heard when problems do occur, and that the systems are in place to make sure that things like this don't happen again. We know that a report is going to come out at the end of this investigation. It's expected to last several months. So they said that they're looking forward to seeing what sort of outcomes are there. We know that one part of the report is going to be a set of recommendations for how to make sexual assault and harassment policies better at the Wisconsin National Guard. So that's definitely something we're going to be keeping an eye out for.
And at least as I've phrased it so far, they'd be looking at the policies. I'm assuming they'll also review not just, you know, the formal policies, but how they were implemented by the leadership of the National Guard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's one thing to have certain policies on the books, right? But to see how they're handled on a case-by-case basis, how enforced these policies are in terms of making sure that victims feel secure, that they're responded to, and that the penalties are implemented for people that are going a bit outside what their conduct should be.
And I understand the investigators, I think there's a hotline or something that National Guard members can go to report what they've seen or even experienced?
There is. So this investigative team that, again, it's from the federal government, the National Guard organization, they're going to come in and do a number of on-site visits, interviews with people, to talk to people who are at these facilities now. But if there are individuals who aren't there anymore or have had experiences that, you know, they wouldn't have the opportunity to speak in person with these individuals, there is an email address that's set up and other means of contact so they can provide, you know, a full picture of what the environment is like at the Wisconsin National Guard facilities. So all of that information is in our story on WPR.org.
And we've seen a lot of institutions and organizations in the news, often in a bad way, when it comes to issues of sexual harassment or assault. From what you've heard from people about this report, is this something we've seen elsewhere in the National Guard around the nation, or is Wisconsin at least so far an outlier in these kinds of investigations?
Well, you know, I'm not aware of any ongoing investigations outside of the state of Wisconsin in terms of sexual assault and harassment policies. We do know that nationally there have been issues with sexual assault in the military, certainly. National Guard offices in particular, I'm not aware of, but this is something that I know the office has been aware of in the past. And, you know, like we said before, they've defended their policies. They certainly have an apparatus in place for dealing with things like this. It's just how well is it being enforced? How well is it being followed? Have there been incidents that haven't been dealt with in the way the institution has meant for them to be dealt with?
And as this story moves ahead, Laurel, I mean, I know you're going to be watching the state budget, but as you keep an eye on this story too, what kind of things are you going to be watching for?
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting to see this report. You know, obviously, they said several months. It's a little bit of an amorphous figure, so we're not exactly sure when we're going to be getting the details of this. But I think getting some specifics about what has happened there, the frequency, and any changes that they think need to be made is going to be really beneficial for, you know, for this organization.
We'll leave it there for now. Laurel, thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's Laurel White, State Capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. She joined us today to talk about a federal probe into the Wisconsin National Guard's sexual harassment and assault policies. That comes after a whistleblower alleged cases were mishandled by the organization. Governor Evers and Senator Tammy Baldwin had requested some kind of national investigation. Coming up next week, Thursday after 8 a.m., Kate Archer-Kent will talk with the Sexual Assault Response Coordinator and a victim advocate for the Wisconsin National Guard about sexual assault reporting, about the policies in place at the National Guard, how they're put into practice, and what this new national investigation could reveal. Yesterday on the show, I pointed out that Wisconsin does not have an official state amphibian, unlike Pennsylvania, which earlier this week made the Eastern Hellbender Salamander, also known as the Snot Otter, their official amphibian. I raised the issue. Now at least one Wisconsinite is picking up the banner. Bruce from Eau Claire sent us an email. He writes, "If you want an amphibian that captures the hearts of Sconeys each spring, it's the spring peeper. one of the first of Wisconsin's 16 frog and toad species to begin calling in the early spring. These guys are about the cutest frog you'll be lucky enough to spot at the edge of your flashlight beam. They're about the size of your thumbnail, and they distend their throat about half their total body size before emitting that highly recognizable peep. When you hear the peepers, you know spring has arrived. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for sending that in. I love it. I'm on board. I just heard the peepers the other day after visiting a local marshland. They were singing loud and clear. We're bringing them up in the background there. I brought like 100 frogs into the studio. No, okay, that's just audio. So I looked up some pictures. They look like your basic small frog, but man, they can really inflate their throats, like freakishly big. Some quick fun facts. Latin name, Pseudocris crucifer. What do they eat? Small invertebrates like beetles, ants, flies, and spiders. Why are they peeping? It is a spring mating call, apparently. If you want to nominate a different amphibian, send us a note, email ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Here's some more peeping on Central Time.